This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Well, this is certainly a guest we look forward to speaking to each and every week. He is just a wellspring of information, regardless of what we're talking to him about. A man who I know is excited about everything happening in the world of sports right now, whether we're talking World Cup, whether we're talking hockey, whether we're talking baseball. It's the one, the only, John Morosi, joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, sir?
Good evening, my friends. I had to actually just double-check before we came on the air to make sure that there were no additional goals scored last night in the Kraken Kings game that I might have missed. And yet, we still stand here today. Yes, the final score, 9-8, as the Associated Press story reminds us. It was the first 9-8 final in the National Hockey League since October the 27th, 2011. What an extraordinary game. I was listening to Everett Fitzhugh's broadcast last night while I was doing the dishes, and I was like, I can't go to bed at this point in time. Like, I'm too invested right now. And it was one of those things too where I was. It's funny how we experience sporting events now. I still have on my phone the Kraken score alert, so my phone will buzz whenever there's a goal in a Kraken game to make sure I'm staying up on everything, no matter what I'm doing. And so my phone was buzz like every 2 or 3 minutes.
It was going crazy.
And sometimes when you turn on it like the radio broadcast in an app, you know, sometimes there's a bit of a latency there where it's not quite on time. And I turned on Everett's broadcast, and I'm now starting to listen, and I thought to myself, now that buzz that I just got, was that goal, did it already happen, or was it just about to happen? And sure enough, like boom. Guys, I've watched a lot of hockey in my life and listened to it, obviously, but that was one of the more remarkable games that I've ever followed in my entire life as a hockey fan. And I'll say this, you know, and I'm sure we'll get in a little bit of the Kraken and how they've changed things around, but just look at the goal scorers in that game, like the big picture. Okay, why is this season so different than last season? Okay, well, Burakovsky is the hero. Mm-hmm. Beniers scores twice. He wasn't on the team at this time last year. Bjorkstrand scores. Sprong scores, and he was someone that wasn't there at the beginning of last year either. And Martin Jones is in goal. Obviously, he makes 27 stops, lets in a few, give or take. But so it's a fun game. It's obviously one of those. But you know what? It's both a fun and fluky game, and it's also the kind of game that you win when it's your year. And I'm not saying it's your year to win the cup. I'm not going to get carried away here. But when it's your year to make the playoffs, when maybe not a lot of people thought you could, a game like last night's the kind of game that you win. You know, you win it on the road. You win it in a way that game, when it happens, it almost seems to matter more than the 2 points that you get when you win. And this team is building confidence. They're showing they can win games in different ways. And I really think just the personnel is better. And the goaltending is marginally better. It's not great, but it's better than it was early last season. And we're just talking about the goal scorers and the more dynamic players. Burakovsky wasn't here. Bjorkstrand wasn't here. Beniers wasn't here to begin last season. And there's no way that they win a game like this a year ago. They simply did not have enough talent to score 9 goals. I mean, they went weeks without scoring 9 goals. Yeah. And so here they do it in one night. So I just think it's a game that we're all going to remember because of the lopsided, just absolutely bonkers scoreline. But I think it told you a lot about this team's ability to win different kinds of games.
Well, I was telling these guys earlier that I had tuned in towards the end, saw the winning goal, and then saw the, more importantly, the post game interviews, and it just struck me that had you not seen the game, had no idea who had won. I think it was McCann who was being interviewed. He looked despondent. Like, yes. He was not smiling. He was not happy. He was answering questions almost as if they lost the game. You know, basically saying, "Hey, that was terrible. Well, that was bad hockey on both sides." Talking about both teams, he's like, "We can't go out there and expect to score 9 goals. We got to play better defense." And just
right.
Really, just the demeanor was interesting to me. Considering, you know, man, you just went through this gauntlet and a shootout, and it's exciting. You know, you don't know who's going to win. You get it done 6 in a row, and if you didn't know that, and you just saw the interview, you'd think, "Oh, they lost, and the streak right. came to an end."
And that's a good sign, by the way. It's a good sign that they care about structure. Dave Hakstol is a structure coach, and that's the kind of game that will drive a structured coach just completely bonkers when you think about it. That's like it being the defensive coordinator when your team wins 64-62 in the NFL. It's just there's not really a lot of good feelings when you look at the video of it, and yet at the end of the day, it's 2 points. And I think it's this to me, the beginning of this year, as much as last year was a sign of how hard it can be to win in the NHL, this year is a sign of sort of the reward you can get when you're generally disciplined. The Kraken did not go out last offseason and totally reinvent the wheel. They knew they had to add some scoring, and they did. They knew that Beniers was going to be ready to make an impact, and he has been. Defensively, they've been better. You know, Vince Dunn notably has just been a better, more active, more athletic player this year than he was a year ago. And they skate better on the back end now than they did a year ago. I think they're a little healthier, a little more comfortable with each other. It's just a better overall team, and I also think that the more stable goaltending helps. And Martin Jones, listen, he was in net for a cup final. He's a good goalie, and he's been certainly good enough to give them a chance to win a lot of hockey games. So you're right. I think the way the win mattered a lot, but the way they processed it mattered more, in that they weren't really happy with it. And that's when you can win a game like that and not be thrilled about it and giddy about it afterward. That's the mark of a team that expects more of themselves, and they believe there's more left to give. And you just look at their division. There have been some teams that have really disappointed early on. I mean, the Golden Knights have been better than a lot of people expected. The Flames have been pretty poor. The Ducks have obviously been awful. The Sharks have been still below 500, along with the Flames. Obviously, they've been pretty mediocre. There's a spot there that I didn't know was going to be there to make the playoffs out of this division, and the Kraken are doing everything they can right now to chase that spot down.
JP, as far as the popularity of the Kraken, I mean, obviously it spiked early on because it was brand new and everything. But I'm looking at last night, about 72% full, about. That's what the ESPN had it calculated at. They hold 18,200 there. They had about 13,000. Are you getting any sense from just the NHL, and just from some of the things that you've read, that this team is starting to get some followers, some consistent followers?
Yeah, I think that in general that this is a very appealing market for the NHL. I think we'll see in the future, whether it's a draft, whether it's an all-star game, those types of big-ticket events are typically given out to teams that have new buildings and have really done a lot to grow the game. Obviously, Vegas got the all-star game last season. I think that now, in some ways, I would say, Dave, that things have trended well, in that the first year the building will kind of sell itself, and the excitement of being there, and the sellouts are still listed there as 17,151 when they play at home. But I think that in year two and into year three, you've got to be able to win and produce. And honestly, the way that they've managed Shane Wright's situation tells you this is not just a developmental season for this team. They expect to win. If this was just about developing, and if they were okay with losing a bunch of games and getting another high lottery pick, Wright might still be in the NHL right now and just getting a lot of shifts. But I think Hextall knew that entering this season, he had to win some games. If their record now looked like it did a year ago at this time, they may have made a coaching change by now. And I think Dave Hextall knows that, and he's taken a real urgent approach, and it's been the correct approach. And with Wright, it's really, in some ways, it's a good, bad situation, in that obviously that they expected he'd be in the NHL right now playing a lot. But the good part of it is he can go to the AHL now, he can go to the World Juniors, and no one's really saying, oh, we're struggling and Wright's not delivering. No, let him just mature. Let him have the development that Beniers had when he was at Michigan, and he was able to do so without everybody worrying about what he was doing day to day. Let him have that development that Matty had on campus. Let him just have it at the AHL and hope that he comes back second half. But I think it's going to be a fun story, too. If this team can really put together a playoff run, they're going to be one of the teams that, you know, national TV and everybody around the sport is going to maybe jump on the bandwagon again. They didn't have that Cinderella season of what the Golden Knights had in their first year. But if you get to the playoffs and you're in the first round and you win a series and all of a sudden you're the upstart team that everybody's falling in love with, you've got a chance to really expand your following across the country if you can just continue on the level of success they've had so far this season.
Well, let's turn our attention to the world of baseball, and we've been previewing or just taking a look at different names, JP, in different cities, talking to, you know, broadcasters and those associated with teams in different markets about, you know, targets. And today we talked to what was his name, Tim Neverett, voice of the Dodgers. Talked to him obviously about Trey Turner, and Cody Bellinger is an interesting name to me because, and I want to get your take on both these guys because I know you had a tweet out there about Trey Turner and the Phillies, but Bellinger is so interesting. You look at what he did, you know, rookie of the year, then his MVP season was off the charts, and you know, everything was good. His strikeout numbers went way down, his home runs, his RBI, his on base, everything was great. And the past few years, and I don't know if it's directly related to the injury, but it's not been good. And then Tim was telling us that, you know, they were batting him ninth and talking about, man, he wishes they would have DH for him, and just how far he's fallen in such a short amount of time. What do you expect the market to be for him, and where does he fit? What team do you see him going to?
You know, it's a great question. I think the team that stands out to me the most is Colorado, and there's been reports about the Rockies' interest in Cody. He needs to play. He needs to put up some numbers. And I think for those reasons, I'm not sure if Seattle's necessarily the best fit for him. I think that the Rockies, the Blue Jays, who need a center fielder to maybe have George Springer play in the corner. Cody is someone who, in the right situation, the right ballpark, I think could still hit for a lot of power. And Colorado, obviously, would be that kind of a park. Toronto would as well. And he is one of the many hitters right now who could benefit greatly from the absence of the shift. And this is where some hitters who have struggled, and I think with Cody's case, maybe the lack of success fed into a lack of confidence, and then there's that mental, physical loop of where you're at and where your confidence is. And I just think that it became an untenable situation for him to stay there and work his way out of it. He had done so much. He had worked so hard. And you need a change of scenery sometimes. And that's what this is, I believe, for Cody Bellinger. And I could even see him going to a place like Cincinnati that's not even looking at contending. But the idea there would be put up some numbers, get traded in July, and then you don't have the qualifying offer attached to you, and you can go out in the free agent market a year from now and be a lot better. But to the point that you made about the injury, you know, his shoulder has not been the same since, you know, he had some issues during the course of the 2020 season, but then, as we know, he injured it celebrating a home run in the bubble there in Texas, and he really hasn't been the same since. And was that the one play that did it? It certainly didn't help. And obviously his ability to simply drive the ball and leverage the swing. He's always been someone that's had a ton of leverage. He's been a launch angle guy. And when you think about that amount of torque that's put on his shoulder and it not being fully sound, I think that's part of the reason why he's not been able to drive the ball as much. So this is where if you were in a mentality where you felt as though the only place you can get a hit is over the wall, then you're going to sell out for the home run all the time. Well, in 2023, in Major League Baseball, it's going to be different because the shift is out. And so you're going to be rewarded more often for hitting the ball on the ground, hitting a line drive. And maybe that, in combination with a new hitting coach, new voice, new ballpark, new setting, will make for the best version of Cody Bellinger again.
All right, JP, what if they do go get a shortstop like Dansby Swanson, Trey Turner, Carlos Carrera? What happens to your namesake, JP Crawford?
Well, I think I appreciate that. He is the much better player than I am at the same name, obviously. He, to me, is still going to be a huge part of the Mariners no matter where he plays. And it is interesting to me that Jerry DePoto and the front office in general have been a little more flexible in how they've described what they view as their shortstop situation. I think they've notably kept open the possibility of signing someone and moving JP to second base. I think that's a much more likely scenario that you would sign, if you decide to sign somebody, that JP becomes the second baseman as opposed to JP getting traded. I think he has become really vital to what this team is all about, the clubhouse and the heartbeat of this team. And the Mariners are so right-handed dominant at the moment that to trade away someone who hits from the left side just doesn't make a lot of sense to me in terms of just balancing out your roster. For the same reason, and looking at the ability and the willingness to balance out the club, I think that your own Seattle area native Michael Conforto makes a lot of sense if you're going to look at him as a possible left fielder slash DH. Maybe you have Kelenic in a similar role, but when you consider how many righty bats you have, and you just brought in one in Teoscar Hernandez, and if you end up signing a shortstop or even signing a second baseman or trading for one, unless it's Colton Wong, it's not terribly easy to find a left-handed batter up the middle of the diamond at second base. And so that's where, for me, getting a left-handed DH and a left-handed left fielder bat, at least, is really important. And we've all had our conversations about Jesse Winker. I tend to think that there's still a better chance than not that he's moved on and traded somewhere, but they still have to find a way to get another lefty that bats somewhere in the top six or seven of the lineup, in addition to Cal Raleigh as a switch hitter, to just give the lineup some balance. And I think it could be Kelenic. Maybe Winker stays. I kind of doubt that he will. It could be Taylor Trammell. But I sure would like to see Michael Conforto come back in a situation where, sure, playing in his hometown would be very appealing for him at a time when the Mariners are becoming one of the franchises that people around the game want to play for.
You know, we were talking about one of the stories that came out that apparently there was a deal that was in place, a three-team deal that ultimately would have shipped, I believe, Marco Gonzalez off, and the Mariners would have ended up with Joey Gallo. I look at that and go, you know, I don't love it. I don't love Gallo on the team. I don't love him really as a player. I know he can play some defense and he's got some pop, but he strikes out a whole bunch. We'll see what the shift does for him, but to me, that move would signify you're looking for a bargain. And to
right.
me, I look at this, JP, and say this is not the time to go bargain shopping. This is the time to send the message to a fan base that is reinvigorated, that is invested and passionate, in a clubhouse, more importantly, that is on the verge. You got to the playoffs. You won a playoff series. We're going to give you the ammunition you need. And
right.
it's not the time to go, well, we're going to take a flyer on this guy who's done some damage in the past, hasn't been great, but we're getting him at a good price, and maybe he finds resurgence here. That feels like the wrong approach.
Right, and I think that with Gallo, I think that was probably more of a trade deadline possibility, that at that point in time, Gallo was just desperate for a change of scenery, and that was kind of a classic change of scenery option where he ends up going to the Dodgers. I think that the Mariners are fortunate in that there are now some outfield free agent options there. And they're also lucky in that they're one of maybe three teams that are contenders and have a surplus of pitching. They'll be able to get something. If they really want to trade Marco or Chris Flexen, they'll get somebody for one of those two guys. It may not be it may not be an all-star, probably won't be, but it will be a useful major league player, I think. And so they remember, they have that chip to move at some point in time. And they also have the ability to swing big on potentially a Brandon Nimmo. I'll say this. You look at the Aaron Judge market, and I don't believe the Mariners are really involved there. And so I think that the Mariners and Mariner fans with respect to Judge are somewhat eager spectators, because whenever Judge makes a decision, then the chess piece is reset on the board, and to me, it's Nimmo's turn. Nimmo is next up after Judge in terms of the most desirable player there in the outfield market. So if Judge signs for $300 million plus, which I believe he will, then I think everybody's going to have to consider, okay, what does Nimmo get? Who's seriously involved? I think whoever does not get Judge between the Giants and the Yankees will then pivot and become one of the front runners to get Nimmo. And I think that's the team that the Mariners are going to have to really battle with, along with potentially the Blue Jays, to bring in somebody who, from a regional perspective and his roots in Wyoming, would hopefully be predisposed from the Mariners' standpoint to really give a good listen and a good consideration to Seattle's offer.
Hey, really quick, just because we saw him down in L.A. At the Charger game, Scott Boras, Pete Carroll's old roommate from UOP. And I'm just going through and I'm looking at Michael Conforto, Boras Corporation. Who was the other one that we were just talking about? Was it
Bellinger.
I mean, what percentage of the league is with Scott Boras?
A lot of them, and a lot of the big guys right now. He has Correa. He has Xander Bogaerts, Nimmo, Conforto, Bellinger, as we just talked about. Carlos Rodon, one of the best pitchers. I mean, he's got a lot. And I'll say this. You know, there's always been – I'll leave you on this note. There's been this perception that Scott always waits until January, February, because, of course, that's how it went with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper a couple off seasons ago. Don't assume that. Remember, at the winter meetings 3 years ago, the last time we had one of these, Strasburg went at the meetings, Anthony Rendon went at the meetings, and so did Gerrit Cole, all of them Boras clients. So I would expect next week shall be brisk business indeed for the attorney at law from Newport Beach, California, Mr. Scott Boras.
Yeah. I hope so. Poor guy needs to know where he's going to get his next meal from. I mean,
well, that's right.
He needs to give advice to my old teammate and schoolmate Craig Landis to possibly expand and get more. Craig Landis has Mike Trout, and I think that's it.
Yeah, there you go. There, I'll tell you a 20-second story. Scott Boras once told me, John, I have owners coming to visit me. And I said to myself, I'm not so sure that I really that I'm going to really go and like print this that owners are visiting Scott Boras. And sure enough, it was when Jason Worth signed with the Nationals at the press conference. Ted Lerner, the owner of the Nationals, said, yeah, well, I visited Scott on this day. We flew out there to visit Scott in Newport Beach. I said, darn it. He was exactly right. So I'm never. I said at that point, I'm never going to doubt Scott's interest from owners ever again. He told me the owners were there, and darn it, on the podium, they said that's exactly what happened. So it's good stuff.
Hey, quickly, I know we're up against the clock. Have you interviewed Boras before?
Sure, many times.
Yep. He's a guy I've heard interviewed a number of times, and much like a politician, there are a lot of words. He says a lot of stuff, and you walk away going, I don't know what the hell he just said. I don't
we've had some great conversations and usually I'll tell you this, back in the day when I would write more articles that would directly relate to his clients, I would get the phone call and I would say this, the proofreading and the assessment of what I had written about his guys, you think your English teacher was tough in high school? Those are some good conversations, chapter and verse. You said this, it's all great. It comes from a great place. He loves his clients. He loves the game too. I admire how much Scott cares about baseball. We've had some great conversations about the state of the game. So many hours on the phone with Scott.
We always appreciate it, John. Great stuff. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it, guys. All the best. Thank you.
There you go. There's John Morosi with us as he is each and every week. Always a fun conversation. And our weekly conversations with our MLB and NHL insider, John Morosi, presented by Stanford's Restaurant. All right. Coming up, our player spotlight. Shelby Harris is going to join us, and he really needs the help of the listeners. We are enlisting our listeners again. You guys get ready to text in. We need food suggestions. He's very specific about what he's looking for, so take a listen. It's coming up.
I don't know about that. There's like three different kinds. He likes everything.
Yeah, but they're specific to...
All right.
I think we're going to get a lot of suggestions.
You'll hear it. You'll hear it next.
866-979-3776 is the text line brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is the Player Spotlight. Every week throughout the season with Wyman and Bob. Brought to you by Mazda of Everett.
It is that time, everybody. We do it every day here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710. It's time for our Player Spotlight. And joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, a member of the Seahawks defense, Shelby Harris is with us. How are you, friend?
I'm doing real good. How you doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We're sort of digesting last week's game, looking forward to this weekend's game. And I'm just curious from your perspective, when you were able to step away from the game for a bit, get in that film room and really break it down, what stood out to you as far as what's happening defensively?
The biggest thing is, like, you see the effort. You know, you see guys committed to, you know, trying to go around and run around, make plays. It's just, the little things, missed tackle here, missed tackle there, that turns into something bigger. And, you know, it's kind of the same problem we had earlier in the year. We just got to, you know, bring it all back together and play good team defense.
Yeah, Shelby, it seemed like, was it maybe the Arizona game where you guys really got after him at home and, you know, kind of fixed the defense there? Is that kind of where you need to get back? Does that, you know, apply to every team going forward?
Well, you know the way the NFL is, though, is, you know, you think you fix something and then another team finds something wrong and then they go and exploit it. And so, you know, it's just a constant, you know, evolution of always fixing, you know, the little fine-tuning your defense. And you know, we just have to, you know, realize where people are trying to hit us, and we got to, you know, make the adjustments there.
How hard is it to recognize that, Shelby, in the middle of it while the game's happening? Is it something you need to step away from and, like I said, watch the film the next day? Or is it easier to make adjustments while the game's happening?
Well, you can make adjustments while the game is happening. It's just, you know, it's harder to implement those adjustments on the fly, you know, without running through it or, you know, having, you know, everyone seeing necessarily the gaps they're supposed to. It's easy to write stuff down on paper and say, hey, this is how we need to change it. It's harder to go out there, you know, full speed and kind of know where you're supposed to be at it when you're making changes like that. So, you know, it goes both ways, but, like, you know, to survive in this league, you got to be able to make adjustments, you know, in the middle of the game, because teams are going to figure out something you're doing and they're going to try to exploit it.
So, Shelby, down on the sidelines, I know they have those pads, like an iPad or whatever it is, the Microsoft pad down there. You can't have video, right? You can have pictures, like still pictures, but not video. Is that right?
Yes, you can have still pictures. Okay. You cannot have video. So you only see, like, you know, little clips, like little, you know, snapshots of the play.
Yeah, gotcha.
I would imagine, Shelby, you guys have enough. There's confidence there that, oh, we can fix this because you did it before. We just, you know, Dave just brought up it was that first matchup against the Cardinals where it seemed like you guys just flipped a switch. It was a different defense, and it was sort of that way for, you know, 6 weeks or so until the last couple weeks. So I would imagine just knowing you guys were able to flip it that quickly before, you feel like you could do that again, right?
You know, that, I wouldn't say necessarily that, but I would just say, you know, our performances, you know, we played against the Giants, one of the best rushing teams in the league, and, you know, we held them, you know, to under 100 yards, you know. So it's just, we've done it. Obviously, we've done it before, but it's more of, you know, every man on his team has to take that responsibility going to this game that we're going to go beat up the person in front of us, and we're not going to let them get us out of our gap, and we're going to make, you know, if the ball comes to us, we're going to make the tackle, and, you know, we just got to kind of, you know, take that pledge and go out there and play team defense.
Hey, Shelby, this is, your eighth year in the league, and nice. This year you got a couple of sacks, and and they're both against Kyler Murray. How difficult are you, kind of proud to hang that skin on your wall? I mean, that guy is probably one of the tougher quarterbacks in the league to sack.
Well, also, it's my ninth year in the league.
I'm sorry.
Throwing that out there. No, you're all good. But, you know, he definitely is one of the tougher guys to sack. You know, I want to definitely add a couple more, you know, people to that list. You know, it was my first time sacking Kyler this year. But, you know, if all goes well, you know, there'd definitely be a lot more sacks going on that, you know, on top of that number. But, you know, when you have quarterbacks like that, and, you know, you're the guy, you know, Perkins from L.A., you know, you have guys who can move and can get out of tough situations. You know, those are always the harder ones to bring down. But then you have guys, you know, like Tom Brady, who's not fast at all, but he can maneuver in the pocket and avoid sacks that way. So, it's you know, you got to pick your poison when it comes to that.
Hey, Shelby, when you get set for a game like this coming up this weekend, you've got the defending Super Bowl champs in the Los Angeles Rams, yet they don't really look that way. They've lost five in a row. They've got so many injuries. They're 3-8. So it feels like on paper you look at it and go, that's a team the Seahawks should beat. But that almost feels like it could be dangerous, like this is the wounded animal, you know, that you got backed into a corner type of thing. How do you guys view this team going in?
Like another conference opponent, you know, another division opponent, we got to go out there and, you know, play Seahawks football. You know, you can't fall into these games and looking at people's records. You know, any division game, you got to go out there and everyone knows they play different. And so we got to go out there, play physical, play our brand of football and, you know, mistake-free football and really go out there and play hard. And when teams like this, you know, they're sticking to their bread and butter. They're doing what they do, and we got to go out there and stop it.
Hey, Shelby, it seems like the guys who are late round picks or free agents maybe have a little bit of extra pride. You were a seventh rounder out of Illinois State. Is that kind of a little bit of a chip on your shoulder? You've been in the league for a long time, made a lot of plays.
Yeah, honestly, for me, screw those guys. You know, that just means there's a bunch of people drafted in front of you or on a team in front of you, and, you know, it's for, honestly, for me, it's really more of a, you know, how you going to survive in this league. And when you're drafted, you know, lower rounds, it's really, you know, I looked at that as like a smack in the face, and, you know, you really didn't believe in me. So it's more of a, you know, go out there and prove it every week, go out there and prove it every day that, you know, all the other teams, you know, I was picked 235. So that means that 234 picks before they all passed up on me. So, you know, I take that personal. So we go out there, and I'm going out there and whipping ass and taking names later.
I like it. Hey, just as far as your time here in Seattle, I mean, you spent a couple years in Oakland, and then you were with Denver for the majority of your career. Your first year in Seattle, how's it been for you? Does it feel natural now, or do you feel like you're still kind of learning the system, learning the city and your teammates, or where are you at with that?
Man, so everything team-wise, everything feels natural. Everything feels, you know, just like how every other season does. You know, you're fitting in with, you know, flowing in with the locker room. Everyone's, you know, getting to know each other a lot more throughout the year. You know, everyone's getting closer. Now, the city, I'm still trying to learn the city. You know, I'm still trying to learn. You know, I'm a big foodie. You know, I love to cook and I love to eat.
Uh-oh.
So I'm trying to find, you know, all the good spots out here. But, you know, everyone has a different opinion. So, you know, I've always been open to, you know, listening to other people's opinions when it comes to food. But, you know, I've just been over here trying to find the best spots. And I found a couple phenomenal spots out here, but I'm looking for more.
Dave, he's come to the right show.
He's come to the right show because the best opinion comes from our texters who listen to our show, Shelby. And so whenever somebody comes on and says, hey, I like barbecue or I like, you know, whatever, seafood, whatever, we have our texters text in just different ideas. So what's your favorite food? What are you looking for, Shelby?
Okay, so my favorite food. So obviously, you know, who doesn't love a good steakhouse? Obviously, but I would say in Seattle, what I have been looking for is a good Italian spot and a good barbecue spot.
Italian and barbecue. Okay, we will get
and
our
burger, and I need a good burger.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. I think challenge accepted. Our texters, our listeners are going to go nuts. You're going to have a very long list of restaurants and possibilities, and Dave will bring it to you. You're going to be set up, Shelby. I promise you that.
All right, I'm excited.
Hey, before we let you go, how were the holidays? Do you have family out here? Were you able to hang out with family or just teammates for Thanksgiving?
No, so for Thanksgiving, who came out? My mother-in-law came out, and she was pretty much the only one to come out. It was, you know, we went over to Coach Hurt's house, and you know, it was cool. It was, you know, it was very, you know, very cool of him to, you know, open up his home and invite everyone over and just, you know, go kick it with the guys, you know, on a holiday. You know, I'm a big believer in, you know, on holidays, no one deserves to spend these holidays alone. So, you know, it's just nice to, you know, get everybody together and, you know, enjoy it.
Do you love your mother-in-law, Shelby? Because I know that's the one person that I sucked up to right away was my mother-in-law, and she loved me.
You know, me and my mother-in-law actually have a very good relationship. So, yeah, that's my dog right there.
That's awesome. Hey, Shelby, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking the time. We're gonna get you that list of Italian places and burger places. Our listeners will have you set up. So never fear on that, and we wish you the best coming up this weekend.
All right, appreciate it, fellas.
There you go, Shelby Harris in our player spotlight. If you missed any of that, make sure you head to the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you. And you heard the mission. He needs steakhouses, a good burger, and Italian food. So those are the three suggestions we need. Text them in, 866-979-3776. We'll get to some of those. Also, six games left in the season. Will these final six games answer the quarterback question for the Seahawks? We'll get into that as well. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, this is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Seattle. 6 games left, Dave. Just 6 games left in the regular season for these Seattle Seahawks. And it's going to be an interesting time because we've been speculating about the draft next year. And what do they do with that pick from the Broncos? It looks like it'll be a top 5. And you feel great about your quarterback situation. Do you go away from that? And you look at it, and this is big for Geno. This is big for him to sort of solidify the opinion. If you think he's the guy, maybe he cements that opinion. If you're a little hesitant like I am, maybe he does more to make you hesitant. Who knows? I mean, that's going to be very interesting. And KJ Wright was talking about this stretch of games as well, looking at this as a prove-it time for him.
Well, here's the thing. We're about to go into December football. We got 5 games left.
Yeah.
All 5 of these games are going to come down to
Geno. Yeah, 6 games left. 6. Now. That's the weirdness of the 17-game season.
6 games? Well, Geno is going to have every opportunity in these 6 games to show that I am worth this contract. And so what he's done thus far is shown that he can be a good quarterback. He's shown in the last 2 minutes of the game, or when the game is on my shoulders, I didn't quite get it done. He is going to have to show in the month of December and going into January that I am worth that 33 that Brady was talking about.
He's not wrong, right? I mean,
33 that Brady was talking
Brady
about.
Brady Henderson came on and was talking about what the expected price tag would be for him, and he thinks $33 million a year.
Wow. You know, I think it's so funny how you overreact. Like, right now we're overreacting, probably. We hope we are, right? to the Raider and the Tampa Bay game. But then, you know, when that hot defense went into the Tampa game, I was like, man, this defense is on their way, man. They're going to, you know, and then, you know, you get these setbacks. And then remember after the game, which game was it? You know, Giants or Arizona, whatever. And everybody was like, oh, you got to pay Geno $33 million, you know.
Yeah.
Now you're kind of go, okay, let's step back a little bit and see. So, yeah, I mean.
Pump the brakes a little.
Yeah, there's just so much, you know, and I think for the rest of the year, I'm out on the speculation of Geno's contract. I mean, let's see at the very end of the year, you know, what happens. How he's still got, like, lots to prove as far as how does he handle certain situations. It'll be, I think, his first time through an entire season, right, as a starter. I'm going to have to go look at his – I know he started at some point, but I don't know that he's ever finished an entire year. So there's lots of questions still to be asked about Geno. But I sure like – it's sure been a really – cool story.
Yeah.
And story. Definitely pulling for him. I just,
played 16 sure. His rookie year.
Okay. There we go. So it's been a long time.
Ooh, that was a rough year.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
8-8.
Completed 55.8% of his passes, 12 touchdowns, 21 picks. Next year, he played 14 games, 13 touchdowns, 13 picks, completed 59.7% of his passes.
But then over the next, 6 years, he had 5 starts in 6 years. So here he is with his 11th, 12th start coming up here. And, you know, let's just see. Let's just see how the year ends. Like I said, I still think there are some things that he is about to go through or experience that you want to see before you go and sign somebody to a huge contract.
Well, even KJ said it there. He just said, hey, he had a chance there in the final minutes of the game. Unfortunately, he didn't do it this time. That's what they need to see. You know, it's great when you can be a guy, when you play with elite. You know, Cam Newton was always like that. It was more about his demeanor. When they were winning and they were ahead, he was in the end zone with a brilliant smile of his, and he's having fun, he's dancing. And then when they were behind and things were going the wrong way, he's on the bench with a towel over his
Gatorade
head.
Towel.
Yeah, so that's more about not so much his performance, but just kind of front runner attitude. And some guys play better as a front runner. We're playing with the lead. I'm more relaxed. I'm making throws I'm not thinking about. And when it's crunch time and I've got to complete this drive. I've got to get this ball down the field to get us in a position to win. Not everybody has that gene. Not everybody is able to do that on a consistent basis. We haven't seen it from Geno yet. He had opportunities in this game. It didn't. We talked about the last 2 possessions for the offense, 1 in regulation, 1 in overtime. A total of 10 yards were gained in the 2 drives. And all you needed was to get in the field goal range, and they just couldn't do it. Not all his fault, certainly, but you're the guy with the ball in your hand. You're the one that people look to lead them down the field. That's what the guys with the it factor do.
What was the other one? You said the Raider game, but the other time, was it the Atlanta game? Where he said they totaled less than 30 yards on those 2 drives.
Yeah, I can't remember which game that was.
I know in Atlanta he had a chance.
There was a chance, yeah.
He got picked off deep.
I don't remember the yardage that they came up with.
But either way, that situation has not gone, you know, his way yet.
Yeah. By the way, before we move on to the next segment, a lot of good suggestions coming in, right? Yeah. The list is getting long. We had Shelby Harris on in the previous segment, in case you guys missed that, and he was looking for restaurant recommendations, which the Wyman and Bob listening group, the core out there, are dialed in. They've got, I don't know, how many guys have you presented lists to? About four or five?
Let's see. One, two, three. I think it's four.
All right. So this will be five. Shelby Harris. I mean, they know where to go. They know where to go when they want proper restaurant recommendations. Right. And he's looking for steakhouses, a good burger, and Italian. Oh, and barbecue.
And barbecue. He doesn't want much.
Yeah.
Right? I got lots of Italian here. I got Piccolino's, Assaggio Ristorante, Staple and Fancy, and Spinas.
Yeah.
So I think we're done there.
In steakhouses, you got the Met, you got Daniel's. I told you have to put El Gaucho on there.
Okay, I'm going to put steak in here.
El Gaucho has to be on there.
Okay, that's your favorite.
Oh, love El Gaucho.
If it's terrible, I'm going to tell him, blame Bob.
No, go there.
El Gaucho's great.
Ask for Mock, one of the greatest servers you could ever encounter.
What's his name?
Mock.
Spell that for me.
I don't really know.
M-O-K.
M-O-K.
M-O-C-K.
Something like that. Starts with an M, ends with an OCK. awesome dude. Fantastic food. So any of those suggestions, text those in, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. And Dave will pass that list along to Shelby Harris, and he'll be forever grateful to the Seahawks fans out there for helping him out. Meanwhile, there is a big decision that awaits the Seahawks after this season. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.